Third and final hour, Robbie and Rex Road here on 102.5, 106.3. The Game from the Game Studio, sponsored by Hiller Plumbing, Heating, Cooling, and Electrical. Joe Rexrode here, Adam Vingan in for Robbie Stanley, who is beaching. Nick Fraser in for Michelle Knezovic, who is big easying, although I think she's actually going to be at OTAs today.
May I bring up one thing about Robbie's vacation?
Okay.
So Robbie tweeted out a picture yesterday of Bucky's, which is my understanding is a very popular convenience store.
I've never been,
but I've seen people wear Bucky's t-shirts, and that's a certain type of devotion to wear the t-shirt of a convenience store. Now I understand, you know, being from the Mid-Atlantic area, I'm a big Wawa guy.
Yep.
So I get the appeal of, you know, the, you know, there's sort of this.
This is not that. I like Wawa too. This
what is
not Buck? That.
Tell me about Bucky's. I need to know. I need to know why it's so.
Do
popular.
Tell him, Joe. Tell
so,
him.
So basically, and I'm pretty new to Bucky's. It's.
And there, are there any Bucky's nearby?
Yeah, there's one on the way to Knoxville on 40.
Okay.
In I guess it's Crossville, right? Yeah.
Crossville. Yeah, Crossville.
So it's astounding.
It's
massive. Like it's like 1,000 gas pumps, huge gas station, and they make all this fresh food.
Okay.
So
that kind of sounds like Wawa.
Yeah,
and
but
Sheetz.
But you're talking about just like they have just a huge, like they're just churning out these barbecue sandwiches. And over here you have this huge section of, you know, burritos and tacos and whatever. And over here you have all the like the pecans and everything that they're making. Like, and then the dessert, I mean, it's, and then you have just your regular gas station stuff, but they have this just huge, and it's amazing to me how much they churn out, how much they apparently just sell. You never wait in line, and like, it's crawling with people. Like,
what,
it's like.
What's the go-to order? Like, if you're going to Bucky's, what are they most known for?
I mean,
for?
I do like the nuts, like the cinnamon, you know, those nuts. I like those are very good.
Pulled pork sandwich is it for me.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, the barbecue sandwiches are really good. Again, it's like, it's one of those things, like, it's like a certain fast food place or whatever, you know.
I'll have to make a like point of stopping there next time I'm in that direction.
Like, I used to always, when I lived in the Midwest and we didn't have them, and I come to the South, I'd always like, oh, gotta go to Chick-fil-A. So then, like, some of my friends would go there and be like, yeah, what's the big deal? I'm like, well, it's fast food. I'm not saying it's filet mignon. It's fast food. Same thing with this. Like, it's good. For gas station sandwiches, yeah, man, really good. Is it, like, the greatest barbecue sandwich I've ever – have I had better barbecue sandwiches than – yes. Yes, I have. But
yes.
For, like, run in there and it's a gas station and it's just – it's an amazing thing to even, like, watch unfold. Like, how are there 200 people in here right now?
Our resident local celebrity, Caroline Fenton, texted in and to me on my personal text line, says that Bucky's is a wonderland.
Yeah, I mean, it is. It's amazing just to take it in. So, and that's the difference between Wawa. Like, Wawa does make some good stuff, for sure.
Yes.
But it still feels like a regular gas station.
Yeah.
Bucky's is like...
It seems like
it's like you've gone to the North Pole or something, okay?
Yeah. Okay, I will make
Without
a point.
Without the elves.
I will make a point to stop at Bucky's. Last week, I was in Charleston, South Carolina, visiting my in-laws, and then we were at the airport coming back to Nashville, and I saw a gentleman wearing a Bucky's t-shirt.
Yeah.
And I was just like, that type of devotion to buy the Bucky's t-shirt must mean this place is really good. So I guess next time I'm in that direction heading east,
yeah, check it out.
I'll make a point to stop.
Yeah, definitely check it out. And yes, and you're going to give us your Preds goalie tape, but we do have Adam from Portland who's calling on the Titans. So I'm gonna get to Adam here real quick. Adam, how you doing?
Bucky's is known for their brisket, Joe.
The brisket, yeah. The brisket's good, but the pulled pork's good. I've had both. Yeah, they're both
and
good.
They're known for their tourists, and it's insane. Like my parents, they introduced me to this. They're like, man, we got to hit this gas station. I'm like, dude, I'm not driving out of my way to go see a gas station. But yeah, that I did have the brisket. It was pretty good. So here's my problem with what you guys were talking about this morning. I don't know. I think Jared's pretty funny when it comes to some of these like professionals that he just acts like is junior high school football players. And you look at ratings, like maybe rate. I always think number one, I think there's a huge problem inside that building as far as keeping people healthy. I think that's probably what I've learned from not being relevant to being a relevant team to not being relevant again. I think just you got to be on the field. So Caleb Farley, Is he the suckiest football player in the world? Maybe not. He's just not healthy. I think that's ultimately what turned fans against J-Rob, is that he kept drafting unhealthy players. It isn't what cost him his job, but that's what cost him his, in J-Rob we trust, is that we ended up getting one player after another like that. Is Dylan Raidens a great football player? I don't know. Probably not, but I don't think he sucks. I don't think all these people suck. It's one thing or another. It's either an injury issue, or maybe they're not being coached as well as they could be. I don't know. I think that it's either, especially on the 2 o'clock show, it's all or nothing sometimes with these players, and it kind of sucks because I think there's gray areas with the Titans.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you're exactly right. Thanks for the call, Adam. And yeah, I mean, it's a huge.
That sounds like a good.
It's a huge problem with Jared.
It seems like a good new name for show. All or nothing with Jared Still.
That's not bad. Stilly and Paulie. All or nothing. All or nothing.
Sounds like a really bad Netflix special.
It does. It sounds like a bad comedian special. Yeah. Again, this idea. Caleb Farley sucked the whole time. No, there's not another person who was out there who was watching who would remotely agree with you. So yeah, I'd like to thank Tyler real quick. You know, I'm going to rant about what this is doing to fans. As Tyler points out, you know, yeah, you have the Thursday gets moved to Sunday, but the people who get screwed are the people who had the tickets to go to a place on a weekend, and now it's a Thursday game. I mean, that's right, because those people probably can't do the weekday game. So they're just out altogether now, right?
Yeah.
Like, they're out of going to the game. And they maybe had a great weekend playing in Nashville, and now they're – or Saints-Rams. You know, they had a great L.A. weekend, and now it's like, oh, I can't get out there Wednesday. So – yeah. Thank you for making that rant better. Now, I want to get to you and the Preds and the goalies.
Mm-hmm.
Because we've talked about it, and I know we've talked some before with you, but as things stand right now, and we talked last week some about, oh, you know, could Toronto be interested in a Saros? And a lot of cold water was thrown on that. But that was just an example, because it looks like Toronto, without their, you know, looking for a GM now, is going to break something up, right? I mean, they're going to change something, because that group of regular season superstars who don't perform in the playoffs has to be broken up. Where are you right now on the Preds? Saros, Askarov, the idea. I mean, I strongly believe that at some point, pretty soon, they have to move one of them. What do you think about that? Who should it be? What's the return?
Yeah, I mean, it is a complicated question, and you know, it really comes down to, like, what we saw at the end of last season, and really what we've seen for the past couple of years, is that UC Saros will prevent the Predators from ever truly rebuilding, because he is too good at his job. The only reason, really, that the Predators – well, let me change that. The primary reason that the Predators were even in the Western Conference wild card race – in the final week of the regular season was because of UC Saros. The team could not score. They could not generate high quality scoring chances. So really all came down to UC Saros. He kept them from being, well, they were a lottery team because they missed the playoffs, but they like a real
quote unquote
real lottery team. Like one that would have had a chance to get the number one pick in the draft. He's the only reason, the primary reason that they are in that position. So, you know, it is hard to find a comparable trade. I did some research last night because I knew we would be talking about this, and it was hard for me to find a trade that would, you know, that would offer a blueprint of sorts for what a UC Saros trade could look like. I mean, he has 2 years left on his contract at $5 million per season, which is an incredible value.
That's a Bucky's level bargain.
That. There's that Bucky spot. We need to get this Bucky sponsorship or something. Mm-hmm. Anyway, you know, UC Saros, you know, it's hard to believe he's 28 years old. You know, it seems like just yesterday he was starting his NHL career. He's pushing 30. I think he's going to be a good goaltender for a long time. You know, to me it makes more sense to if you're asking me if I would trade Saros or Askarov today, I would trade Saros because he's the older goaltender. He's more proven, so you would assume you would get more from him because he has a body of work to pull from at the NHL level, and it saves you money. I mean, if UC Soros continues to play like this, his next contract is going to be significant. And
what's his next deal? Let's just say he's here. You know what's the term? What's the AAV?
If we assume that UC Saros continues to play the way he has been playing, and I know he was not a Vezina Trophy finalist this season, which quite frankly was absurd,
a mistake.
But he was last season. You know, I'm thinking at least 7.5 to 8. Would be a cap hit for UC Soros. I think I'd have to look at the other comparable goalies and their current cap hits. But off the top of my head, I'm thinking you're looking at a $7.5 to $8 million.
And the way things time out for him, what do you think the term is on that? I mean, he's not.
I mean,
he's not an 8-year deal.
He'll be 30 or 31. So I would probably say like a five or six year deal. I mean, that makes him Pecorine.
Well, like that could really hurt. You know, could really hurt on the back end of that.
I mean, I think if he has another fabulous season and you can trade him with 1 year left on his deal next year, I think that might be the best case scenario.
And I think that's the most likely scenario. But I talk about it now because I don't know what's going to materialize this offseason. Like, something like absolutely irresistible could all of a sudden be placed before Barry Trotz. And
I'm skeptical that, I mean, I'm guilty of this as well. We've talked about what they could get for UC Soros. I don't think they're getting a Tanner Jeannot-like return. Like, I just don't see, there's just not a precedent, I don't think, for this type of move with a goaltender. I mean, maybe.
Well, the league. Look, this is a, like, right now, and
which is funny to say, a Tanner Jeannot like return.
Yeah, that's a good comparison.
Yes,
it's a heck of a return. Well, and this year is definitely one of those. Oh yeah, you don't need a great goaltender to make a run.
Right.
I mean, obviously, you mentioned Bobrovsky. I mean, he's been a great goaltender in this league, but
not late. Like,
but
his
the teams that were needing to lean on their goaltending to get here, they're out.
Right.
So,
and the one team that the best goalie remaining in the NHL in the Stanley Cup playoffs is Jake Oettinger,
right,
which is saying something. He's great, but he's struggled in this series. He's been struggling lately.
Yeah. So, you know, not that GMs are all just going flavor of the month, but it's probably not helpful.
No.
So, all right, when we come back, we'll talk more about this. UC Soros, Yaroslav Askarov. Possible deals, and I'd like to let you know Robbie Rex Show is presented by TJ Anderson Homes of Benchmark Realty. Call TJ's team to see why they are referred so often. More on the Preds and goalies. Robbie Rex Show, 102.5, 106.3 The Game. Tune in for Nashville Sounds Baseball tonight, 6:35 p.m. on 94.9 The Fan. The Sounds take on the Iowa Cubs, AAA affiliate of the Chicago Cubs. Sounds Baseball, 94.9 The Fan, presented by 312 Pizza, Farm Bureau Health Plans, and Family Leisure. Welcome back in, Robbie Rex Show. Here on 102.5, 106.3 The Game, Joe Rexroad, Adam Vingan, Nick Frazier, talking Preds, talking goalies, talking trade possibilities. Okay, so I hear you on bigger return for Soros,
mm-hmm.
Proven player. And obviously it would make sense to move on from him. You have the young guy coming up. You have a longer term. You have more cap space with the younger guy. But how big is the difference in return? And is there something to be said for you could have Soros still in very prime years by the time you get to the type of team you want to have? Would you not want the proven goalie to be your goalie for those teams? As opposed to, although Askarov is obviously a very enticing and very high ceiling talent, don't know that it's all coming together for him.
No, and that unknown works both ways, because if a team is interested in trading for him, they think he has unlimited potential, and then they trade a lot of assets for him, then he doesn't reach that potential. I mean, think we just mentioned Tanner Jeannot, right? Tanner Jeannot that trade still to this day, like, shocks me, the amount of assets that the Predators got back for Tanner Jeannot. And
I
like
you more than the Granlund deal, because that one still blows me away.
I mean, you should hear the takes from Pittsburgh on that trade. They're, you know, one of the worst trades in franchise history level for that. You know, the fact that the Predators were able to get a second round pick out of Mikael Granlund without having to retain any salary was a stroke of genius by David Poile. But you know, Tanner Jeannot fetching that much, all of those draft picks and Cal Foote, it was a sight to behold. And Tanner was a non-factor for the Tampa Bay Lightning, not just in the postseason, but the regular season too. Now, he was hurt at one point and missed a few games, but he did not provide that level of they acquired him, the Lightning did, hoping that he would be like Blake Coleman and Barclay Goodrow before him, that third line guy who makes a huge difference. It just never worked out that way. But when I think about UC Saros, I think about Pekka-Rinne 10, 12 years ago. You know, those teams, you know, the early 2010s teams of the Nashville Predators, you know, the teams that played Vancouver in the playoffs, the team that played Arizona or then Phoenix in the playoffs, you know, those teams really had no business going as far as they did. But Pekka-Rinne was outstanding, and we came to know that that was just who Pekka-Rinne was, and that's why the guy has a statue outside of Bridgestone Arena now. You know, I feel like if the Predators are serious about really rebuilding this team, as I said before, UC Saros is going to prevent them from doing that because he's too good. Like that.
So trade him now.
I mean, I would not be against it. But I mean, if a team gets 2 years of cost controlled UC Saros at the level he's playing at, maybe you do get a haul back that changes the trajectory of the franchise and change. It's just, I was trying to think of recent trades involving goalies of a certain stature, and there really aren't that many. I mean, the two I always talk about are the trade that Arizona made with Colorado to get Darcy Kemper,
right,
and the trade that Colorado made with the Rangers to get Alexander Georgiev. And those trades did bring back some assets. I think there was a first round pick involved in the Kemper trade, and I think Georgiev brought back 3 draft picks, but none of them were first round picks. I mean, I think
but it was Saros is better than those guys,
right? But it's just there's just not a precedent, a recent precedent to you know, say if they trade Saros right now, this is what they're likely to get. There's just goalie trades like that are rare, so it's just hard to handicap what the Predators would get in return.
So we had Mike Zeisberger on last week, who, by the way, is just an absolute delight.
Love Zeis.
Makes me feel
Zeis
looks
like he looks like a Bond villain. You know, he's he's tall. He's got the slicked back hair. He's a big guy, like a broad guy, like, you know. So he's
a
just,
super kind Bond villain, killing you with kindness.
Yes, no, great guy, Mike 007. Zeisberger, but like he looks like God, was it
Jaws?
Jaws. Yes, he looks a little bit like Jaws. Anyway.
Yeah, so
I say that, you know, lovingly.
With all due respect.
Yes.
All
but great guy, Mike Zeisberger.
He threw cold water on
I heard him say that.
Yeah,
yes.
On the Saros for Nylander. But what about like that level of forward? Like not quite. I mean how would you compare Nylander as a forward to say a Forsberg?
I mean that's a good question. I mean Nylander is, you know, Nylander is an offense first forward. We've talked about Mitch Marner versus William Nylander. Marner is an elite two-way forward.
Player.
I mean, the guy
right.
is, I believe, a Selke Trophy finalist this year. Nylander is all offense. That isn't to say that his defense is terrible, but it's not what he's known for. He's not going to be killing penalties. You know, he's not going to be taking a ton of defensive zone draws. He's not going to be playing a lot of tough. I mean, if he's not going to be playing. You know, he's not going to be that line you match up with the other top line to shut them down.
Is he going to get you 80 points if he isn't surrounded by some of the talent he's surrounded by in Toronto?
I think Nylander is a good enough player that he could still get 80 points if he was on this team. Okay. I really do.
Okay. Okay, so is a player like that a reasonable, in your mind, level of return for Saros? Not him specifically, but just that level of player. Do you think that's realistic?
I think so. If it's not Nylander, I do think it could be someone else. And I'm trying to think of like which, you know, which players could be, you know, on that board. I'm looking at
the, what teams are like. I obviously always think of the Oilers, right?
Right.
The and Oilers. I know people for on sure. the text lines, please, please text me about how they're going to trade him for Draisaitl.
Good luck.
That's not going to happen.
Like here's a good example. Would you trade UC Saros to the Ottawa Senators for Alex DeBrincat?
I think I might.
I mean, DeBrincat was a multi-40 goal guy with the Chicago Blackhawks. He was playing with Patrick Kane, so that does help. He had 27 goals and 66 points in 82 games for the Senators last season, in his first season.
The mighty, mighty Senators.
Is a DeBrincat on that level?
What's his age? What, like 27, 28?
DeBrincat is 25.
He's only 25.
Yes. He'll be 26 in December.
That's a good thing to bring up because it's interesting. It's like it's not
he fits
it's
in,
not
and DeBrincat
bulletproof,
fits in,
but
he fits
there's flaws.
Into, right. But he fits into what the Predators are trying to do. It would get them a little bit younger. You know, DeBrincat is a proven scorer in the NHL. He's not on the level of Nylander, but he's not far off. Like to me, and the Senators want to compete. They need a goalie. I would consider it.
Okay.
I really would. I mean, I think he's an RFA this summer, so you'd have to re-sign him.
You'd have to redo his deal. What's his AAV right now?
Let's see. I'm going to look that up right now.
About the same as Saros?
Let's see. Where is his contract? His expiring contract has a $6.4 million contract.
Okay, a little bit more than Saros.
So you're probably looking at so his qualifying, here's the thing, because he's an RFA, his qualifying offer is $9 million based off his salary. He made a $9 million salary last season. So his qualifying offer is based off of that salary. So if you want to make a qualifying offer, that doesn't mean you have to sign him to a $9 million contract. But that's what, if you want to qualify him and maintain his rights, that's how much it's going to cost. So he might, that would make him the highest paid forward on the team.
Yeah. Whew, I don't know, man. I don't know.
That's an interesting one. But DeBrincat is the type of player that the Predators could use, and I think a player like UC Saros could bring a player of that caliber back.
Yeah. All right. We may have to revisit that either today or later this week. But in the meantime, when we come back, we're going to have Michael Rosenberg, Sports Illustrated, talk about his really eye-opening, I hope everyone read it, story about Brett Favre. Coming up next, Robbie and Rex Show, 102.5, 106.3 The Game. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Strode, 102.5, 106.3 The Game. Very excited to welcome in our next guest to talk about an extensive piece he has done on the Brett Favre welfare scandal in Mississippi. Good friend of mine for a long time, Michael Rosenberg, Sports Illustrated. Before I bring in Mike, I just want to say, you know, there are a lot of people who I admire in this business, but Michael, who I've known for a long time, he's one of those people who I get mad sometimes when I read him because it's like, how the heck did he come up with that? I could never possibly do that. So there you go. Michael Rosenberg, welcome to the show. How are you, my friend?
I am as great as I was an hour ago when you told me I was
Listen, I've only lived in Central Time Zone for 7 years, okay? I told Michael, I'm like, yeah, we'll have you on at 8:30. Well, he lives in Michigan. That's on Eastern Time Zone, so I screwed it up.
I've had many people mess up the time zone of Michigan over the years. I did not think you would be one of them, but that's all right. We love you.
Listen, I mean, in this state, you know, we have two. Like, if you go to Knoxville from here, it's Eastern. We're in Central. And by the way, Vingan, I mean, you can attest to this. Central Time Zone is pretty amazing, right?
It's pretty great.
Yeah.
Everything comes on an hour earlier.
Yeah. And as we advance in age, it's very handy. But, Mike, again, thanks for being here, man. I really appreciate it. And first of all, I just want to ask you, on this story, how does this one rate in terms of time spent reporting and length of story for you in your career? Because it is an exhaustive job you've done here on Brett Favre.
I like that. Yes, that's always a good way to judge your work by sheer volume. I will say this. It was about as complicated a story to figure out for me as anything I can remember working on. I'm not a big fan of, this, I work so much, I read through these files, this many files, talk to so many people. I mean, it's our job, right? So you shouldn't really be like bragging about doing your work, but it was just hard to get a handle on it. You know, it was a very confusing scheme with sort of a lot of, in some ways it was simple, but there were just so many different characters and figuring out how it all fell apart and why and what the laws actually were and trying to make it a readable story. It was challenging, but, you know, that's why we're here. Do our best.
So what, I mean, clearly, you know, reading this story, I mean, Brett Favre, over and over again, I mean, and you have the quote, of course, you know, the former U.S. Attorney Brad Piggott, the quote from him is, quote, Brett Favre's repeated demands for this grant money were certainly the driving force for, we're talking, what, $8.3 million of welfare funds directed to these projects. What when you, as you went through this, what was the most surprising thing, or what was the thing that really struck you about what Favre's involvement was?
You know, it was really interesting just sort of to see like how he dealt with people, you know, and why. Like you have this question, I think, as you read it, of like reading his text, like, is he desperate? Like, why is he so kind of obsessed with this? And obviously, you'd be getting in someone's head. It's hard to know exactly. I mean, my perception of Brett Favre over the years from, you know, being around him a little bit and just being in sports and watching and all that and being in journalism is just, like, highly competitive, right? What do we say about Brett Favre? Highly competitive. Never quits. Like, we've seen that, right, in his football career. Refuses to back down. Fearless. Like, this is the same guy we've always seen, right? And so some of those traits seem to come through in what he was doing. And this is something, this has been a problem in Mississippi with welfare spending since, you know, for 30 years, maybe longer than that with these particular funds. And that's the environment that he was in. And he was, you know, trying to win. I mean, he was trying to get as much as he could. I don't think he was really thinking of anything else. I was in one of his text messages. And so the obsessiveness of it was kind of amazing. And the way that, again, he seems to, whether he is intending to or not, have manipulated people into doing what he wanted. He kind of frames the project as a group thing when he was the one who had promised the money. It was really interesting to me, the personal dynamics. And I think that's why the story seems to have caught on with people is, you know, it's not the fear when you do like a 9,000 word story is that like you give people a paragraph and they're like, all right, I know what happened. And that's not really what happened. You know, I mean, that's a concern, you know, like sometimes it's like with a book idea. You're like, well, that's a great book. You're like, no, that's actually a good story for about 1,000 words. I don't want to read 300 pages. But in this case, once you see the characters and how they interacted and how they did things and then how they started to plot against her, I think that's kind of what drives the story. It's really about the people who did it, not just the transactions.
I think you laid out far well. Also, I would add, sends interesting texts would be another thing that has marked Brett during his career.
Yeah, the casualness of it is amazing. I mean, can you imagine like texting the governor of your state to try to get several million dollars in money and you don't even capitalize your first name? Like, introduce yourself. I don't know. I would look it over before hitting send.
Michael Rosenberg of Sports Illustrated joining us here on Robbie and Rexford. Michael, in your story, you know, you mentioned that it's a distinct possibility that Favre could be indicted for these alleged crimes. You mentioned that seven people have either pleaded guilty or now face criminal charges, including Nancy New, who was the person directly in charge of distributing a large portion of Mississippi's welfare money. Now, you know, the cynic in me is like, most times people of Favre's stature, not that they get away with it, because I don't think he's going to, but they, you know, they plea out or something of that nature where they end up not actually getting indicted. I mean, just based on everything that you have uncovered, you know, what are the chances you think that he actually does get indicted for what he's done in this scheme?
You know, it's hard to put like a number on it. It's very hard to predict because I think people, you know, lawyers will say like prosecutors, there's just so much discretion, right? There's what's worthwhile? What do we think we can win? You know, what's a good use of our resources? All of that. What's very clear from the case is that they're aiming, you know, they're building. So they're getting these plea agreements. These people have presumably agreed to testify. And so that's all part of an end game, right? Like there's no reason to think that they're going to stop. And so who's left? And really, the three biggest pieces left are Jake Van Landingham, who was Favre's business partner with this pharmaceutical company, Brett Favre, and then Phil Bryant, who was the governor. Now, what prosecutors are thinking if they are going to try to, you know, get one or two of them to plead out as well and testify to get whoever their biggest target is, which most people seem to think is Phil Bryant, whether they just suddenly decide they don't have the case there and walk away, which feels unlikely, but you never know. We'll see. And you know, if he is indicted and Favre has dug in so much that I don't think he would reach a plea deal, it then becomes a question of, can you get a conviction, you know? And that's, there are so many variables, it's hard to say, but if I were Brett Favre, I would be worried about it at night right now. I mean, there's no doubt he should be very concerned.
Why do you think that the Mississippi Welfare Office is so rife with this corruption? Now, you know, some of the other people involved tangentially in this are, you know, the DiBiase family, the professional wrestling family, Ted DiBiase Sr., the Million Dollar Man, his son Ted Jr., who was also a professional wrestler, you know, has been involved in Mississippi welfare fraud. What in your reporting, why is this office so rife with scandal?
Well,
it's a big question.
Sorry about that.
I'm happy to, you know, amazingly enough, I'm happy to answer. You may miss a couple of commercial breaks, but the TANF funds, these temporary assistance for needy family funds, are something that were created in the 1990s by the federal government, distributed to the states. And Mississippi was one of the states that really kind of bristled at sort of the expansion of this welfare state from the beginning. And they've never distributed well. And it's obviously been, it's a state that has been run by people that are very much like limited government, limited bureaucracy, limited entitlements. And so that resistance has played into this, and the lack of regulation, of oversight, and really desire to distribute the money has limitations. There aren't that many clear red line limitations on TANF funds. All of that has made it just rife for corruption. And that it's almost been like a slush fund for a long time, where a lot of people do get the money, but most of it, you know, a lot of it is not spent properly. And one of the interesting things to me about this story is, if you are a diehard liberal that just believes government should be doing more and more to help the poor, or if you are an ardent libertarian who wants the most limited government you can have, either way, you should really be outraged by this. You know, you could also argue it proves your point either way. I mean, this is because you have a governor that's ostensibly saying we don't want to waste money, and then he's going off and wasting money, right? And so that's not a good outcome for anybody, no matter what your political beliefs are. And so that, I think, is it's really sort of largely even beyond Brett Favre and Phil Bryant. It's what happened in Mississippi to me is what can happen in any state or with any government that is dominated by one party. There's just no checks and balances. There's no repercussions. And I'm not saying like it's one party or the other, but when you have one party and they don't have to answer to anybody, I mean, the Mississippi legislature still to this day has not really addressed the underlying problem, which is that they don't distribute welfare money properly because they don't want to deal with it because it doesn't look good for the ruling party.
Michael Rosenberg, Sports Illustrated. Hey, thank you so much for spending time on this. It's an incredible story. I mean, the way you finish it, as you do a lot of things, it really wraps it up pretty in a compelling way. Everyone should read this story at SI.com. Michael, it's great to talk to you. Whichever time zone we are in, it's always great to catch up with you. Appreciate it, my friend. We'll talk to you soon.
We've been in many time zones at Olympics and things together. Always a pleasure.
That is true. Thanks, buddy. Michael Rosenberg, Sports Illustrated. Everybody check out this story about it. The reporting is exhaustive. It's called SI's Brett Favre Brett Favre welfare scandal investigation. Favre was, quote, the driving force, behind this situation. It's very eye-opening, and it is I'm with Mike. I mean, I think that Brett Favre should be very concerned right now. And when we come back, we'll react more to this and talk a little bit at Titans OTAs. Robbie Rexroad, 102.5, 106.3 The Game. Final segment, Robbie and Rexroad here on 102.5, 106.3 The Game. Thanks again to Michael Rosenberg. I think the best sports writer in America. I probably should have said that when we had him on the line.
I think you buttered him up enough.
Well, but I actually think he might be the best sports writer in America. But certainly this story I wrote about Brett Favre, I mean, it's long. Like you said, I mean, 9,000 words is like you've got to make the investment, but I would invite anybody to do so. It's like if once you read the whole thing, like all the text and everything, I mean, Favre, first of all, the driving force does not begin to say it. Like, he did all of this. I mean, his text, he is relentless. And also, he's very manipulative. I mean, the texts reflect that. The Brett Favre texts that were sent by Brett Favre to these people who made all this stuff happen, many of whom have now been indicted and arrested, like, they are, it's an obsession for Brett Favre. Even after people started getting arrested, some of his texts, I mean, it's a very worthwhile story to read. First of all, I mean, it's not like this is a new takeaway from Rosenberg's story, but like, if anybody had any question, I mean, Brett Favre, man, this guy is problematic, and he should be indicted and he should be in trouble for this. But the amazing thing also is that the casualness of all of it, because it is like basically these welfare funds have just been like a piggy bank for people, you know? So I'm like, there's a certain, like, the atmosphere and the environment itself lent itself to this even being possible. You know, so you have to keep it in the proper context, and the story does keep it in the proper context. At the same time, I mean, I do have a little bit different view of, like, how just aggressive and, again, relentless is the word, Favre was in trying to make this happen.
Yeah, and one of the major things he was looking to to get funds for were a new volleyball arena for his daughter.
Right. That was three or four million. About four something. Yeah.
I'm sorry. How much money has Brett Favre made in his NFL career? How much money has he made from Wrangler ads?
Doesn't matter.
Doesn't
matter.
It's just the greed and selfishness is just, it's gross. It really is gross.
Yeah. Hey, look, Brett Favre has been a gross person before this, okay?
Yes.
Again, we want to talk about certain texts that have been sent.
You talk about text messages, yes.
You can go back through, you can go back through the Mark Chmura stuff with the Packers for people who remember that. I mean, there's a pretty consistent theme with him. So
no, I remember HBO Real Sports did a segment on this too. You know, it has been, Michael did a fabulous job reporting it, and it's been well covered. You know, and they talk to people who actually would benefit from having these, TANF funds. You know, and it's, to see the people that are being hurt by not getting this welfare money. It's gross. I mean, Brett Favre is, was a success story coming out of Mississippi, which is, if I'm not mistaken, one of the poorest states in the country. So many people could use this money, and, Favre's greed was just too great, and people were willing in the government to feed into it.
And like Rosenberg said, you always, in situations like this, there is a possibility sometimes it's like, okay, if you'll flip on this person, maybe former Governor Phil Bryant is like the primary target, then you'll get, some lenience. So we'll see. I don't think we've heard the last of this at all. Okay, are we finishing up on Titans OTAs? Are we finishing up? There is some backlash in your DeBrinket. Someone saying that he's too small.
Okay.
Also, you can't bring in a top scoring forward to just completely out net with no goalie for years. Okay. Well, I don't know. I don't quite understand that sentence, but I think what you're trying to say is you can't, empty yourself at goalie. This is what I'd say about that. Like you always say, Saros is so good, he's going to keep you mid. Well, what if you make this deal? You bring in a good forward. I mean, first of all, if you bring in a really good forward, you may not stink anyway, but what if you did have a year where you stepped back while Askarov is getting ready and you have a high pick next year?
Mm-hmm.
How much does it matter? But, hey, you could actually get into the lottery and you have a year of pain, and then by the time Askarov is ready, you may have yourself a good – with some of these young guys, Evangelista developing. Does Kemmel join the fray like in 24? I mean, you can see where – the 24-25 season, maybe you start to look like the Preds of, 2014, 2015, 10 years later.
You don't, it's rebuilds or retools or whatever you want to call it, they can be painful processes. And, You know, I look at a team like the New York Islanders, for example. The Islanders are a team that makes the playoffs fairly consistently. They went to a couple of conference finals with Barry Trotz. They are, and you know, I feel like the Islanders are a lot like the Predators. They are not a team that has, I mean, they have high-end players. I mean, they have Matthew Barzal. I mean, they traded for Bo Horvat. But they have an elite goaltender in Ilya Sorokin that makes them seem more competitive than they actually are. And I think that UC Saros is so good that he is going to prevent the Predators from really getting to a point where they can take big steps forward. Like, you know, if you trade UC Saros and you rely on Kevin Lankinen to be your starting goaltender, or you sign a free agent like a Freddie Anderson or a Antti Raanta, both of whom are in Carolina, I think they're both free agents this summer. You sign one of them. Are you going to be good? No, but that's the point. That's the point. You're not supposed to be good. Like the Predators are. If you know, the one thing that this team has never really had is a top of the line young scorer. You know, I know that Forsberg had a big season a couple of years ago, but you know, if you want a player of a Connor Bedard like, you know, trajectory, you're gonna have to stink. You're just gonna have to do it like that.
But my quick argument to you though is that that guy comes around every 3-4
right, but
years,
but
you have to have the top pick,
right? But you know, you have to, you're right about that, but you have to put yourself in position to get that guy.
It hurts, Adam.
It does. I'm not saying to tank.
Headline in the story, Adam Vingan says, Preds must stink.
I'm not saying you need to openly tank, but UC Saros is, too, as I've said multiple times, is too good to get, that he's going to prevent this team from hitting it big in the draft.
Who's going to have a better career when it's all said and done? UC Saros or Yaroslav Askarov?
That's hard to say.
Come on. I'm putting you on the spot.
Oh, man. I like Askarov.
Yeah,
I think he could be really good.
Askarov has all the traits, right?
I think he could be really good.
I mean, he's a little bit.
I mean, first
he's
round
a bit all over the
first
place
round
right now.
Goalies. There, it's an interesting. I mean, look at like Jack Campbell. Jack Campbell was a first round goalie. You know, was not good in Dallas. Was not good in Los. I mean, was not good in Los Angeles. Was great in Toronto for one season. Went to Edmonton. He stunk. Now, you know, Stuart Skinner was starting playoff games for the Edmonton Oilers. So first round goalies don't have a great trajectory, but. I am firmly on the trade UC Saros train. I really do think that
that's the thing, though. You do that, and then Askarov doesn't come. You know, it doesn't all come together for him.
The thing working for the Predators is they have an established track record of developing goaltenders.
Good point.
They don't have it. They have it with defensemen. They don't have it with forward, but they definitely have it with goalie. So I trust the Predators to develop Askarov more than I would them to develop a young forward at this point.
Okay, we'll get more into this tomorrow along with tons of information, of course. Oh, as I punch the mic.
There you go.
Tons of information.
You got to get out of here, Jeff.
We have a little bit of time. Okay, we have a little bit of time. We have a little bit of time. I'm wrong.
Teased you.
I'm on the wrong, again, just like with Rosenberg, I'm on the wrong time zone, okay? So real quick before we go, the one question you want asked by someone today at Preds OTA or Preds
Titans OTA.
I'm really closing the show strong here. Titans OTAs. You got both coordinators. You got a couple veteran players. TBD. Any player coming off the field. Vrabel. One question that you need answered today.
If Kevin Byard is there, you know, I want to hear that he is. You know, committed to the. I mean, I just want to hear. I mean, I'm sure that I know the answer might be yes.
I was
going to
say, do you think that he would say, "No, actually, I hate this place."
I know,
I wish
but
I wasn't
but
here.
You need the soundbite. You need the soundbite. That's all I'm saying.
Okay, what if you had a question that someone was given truth serum?
How much was the pay cut that you were asked?
That's actually pretty good. That would. I mean, it's worth asking.
It's worth giving it a shot. You got to ask. You
like,
gotta
okay,
ask.
Just how like how much are we talking here? Like, yeah, you can do like a lot.
What's his salary? Like you put your hands together and go. Tell me when to stop.
Yeah.
Like I'm just gonna keep going. Tell
exactly.
me when to stop.
And then we'll assign numbers to it.
Yes.
So we'll have a ton of that tomorrow, talking about the Titans and OTAs, and coming up right here on 102.5, 106.3 Game is Chase and Michelle.